The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
What is up, guys? You're listening to the HSP SmackDown Review. I am Jeff Martin, alongside my tag team partner, the Trendsetter. Good to be back here 3 weeks in a row now, Trendsetter. And you can follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. Great to be here on the WWE Podcast, Trendsetter. All you can say about this episode is, man, did they let them fight. And that's a good thing.
It is a good thing because there's been a lot of pent-up frustration, Jeff, something that's been building up as we're leading towards Backlash. And now, I mean, let's just start off where it started last week with this whole situation with Jeff Hardy. And now we kind of have an idea of what's going on. He came out, gave a heartfelt speech talking about how he hadn't slipped, how, you know, he'd been begging for forgiveness so many times, and maybe this was his last opportunity. But then finding out basically that a witness at the police station admitted that the person they saw leave the car that supposedly ran over Elias had a red beard, had red hair. So all fingers were pointing towards Sheamus. Sheamus comes out, says Jeff Hardy's making excuses, and ends up going to a brawl. And you're thinking this is going to end up basically a match between the two of them. But basically, you said, let them fight, and that's what they did.
No, they did, and it went, you saw Jeff Hardy take the plexiglass to the face a bunch of times by Sheamus.
Like a true hockey player, basically, taking
exactly,
that glass.
Like old school hockey there, but Sheamus, I told you, man, last week he was, to me, the main culprit, and then, you know, you have, you know, unidentified source claiming that it was Sheamus, and, okay, you know, well, not Sheamus, but, the red beard, the red hair, so... Okay, so now...
I mean, if it was anybody else, we'd be surprised right now, because the storyline was building that was going to lead to these two squaring off.
Exactly, and so now we're going to get them at Backlash next week, and so there you go, Trendsetter. I mean, like, here's what I was thinking about this past week, because, of course, Matt Hardy made the comment that, boy, I'm happy that I'm working for Tony Khan, and Rebby Hardy making her comments. And basically,
when does Rebby Hardy never make comments?
Rebby Hardy, yeah, exactly. Here's the thing. Like, when we watched it last week, there was a little bit of uncomfortableness with this because it's like real life using it into the angle. And so a lot of people were wondering, like, was this a class move by WWE? Was this, a desperation angle that they're trying to do here to salvage and improve the ratings on SmackDown? So I really didn't have that much of a problem with it because here's a guy, Matt Hardy, who uses real-life situation with Lita to, come back and, make money with Edge, right?
Yeah.
So, to me, Jeff Hardy, if he approves this and this is okay by him, are some of the jokes corny? Are they really kind of pushing it with Sheamus throwing stuff into Jeff Hardy's face about his past? Yes, but I mean, if Jeff Hardy approves and this is something that he's comfortable with, then I think they should go with it. But is it something ideal? Is it something that you think is classy by WWE? You have your opinion to that as well. But I mean, for Matt Hardy to, show his support for AEW and wouldn't want something like that in real life for him to be portrayed, it's kind of like weird because he's the guy that made a lot of money with Edge with the whole lead angle.
Yeah, honestly, for me, it sounds really hypocritical. It's what it is because, when we look at pro wrestling or look at stuff like this, it's a soap opera, isn't it? It's like, and within a soap opera, we're taking real life situations and we're taking them into a storyline and recreating them so people could have some type of attachment to it. Now here, they're taking real life experiences that, Jeff Hardy's dealt with, or in this case, we use the example of Matt Hardy with the whole situation with Lita cheating on him on Edge, and that was a real life situation. And both were professional enough to start working together to use that to intrigue people to say, hey, listen, this is more personal. This isn't just a storyline type of thing. This is real life. Same thing with CM Punk. I know CM Punk had his issues and his viewpoints on it not being a good idea using the whole Jeff Hardy storyline. And, little did I know that, years prior, he was doing a similar storyline with Chris Jericho, basically. Now, granted, CM Punk is straight edge, but, his family had issues with alcoholism and his father and stuff like that. So, people ask, where do you draw the line? Honestly, it's fair game. And in reality, too, for anybody to complain about
it's
and say
overdoing
they should.
It, you know? It's not like Jericho throwing Jack Daniels in CM Punk's face or anything like that. You know what I mean? This is just, right now, it's just a war of words, and Sheamus is really pushing Jeff Hardy's buttons. And, of course, Jeff Hardy received the huge bro kick from Sheamus, setting up their match for Backlash. So, I mean, it has a backstory. Whether you wanted to maybe have like another week or two of feuding, you will have a go-home show next week and see what happens there. But are you, like you said before, are you emotionally invested in Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus at Backlash?
In my honest opinion, I'm not, because I've seen this type of storyline be played before, the whole situation where the person's had so many chances, so many opportunities. This is their last chance. Somebody's bullying them. It's a classic storyline. I get it. But for me personally, I'm not that much invested in it, more as I am invested to see Jeff and Sheamus, because prior to that, the week before, they were seen, you know, the 2 weeks prior to that, Jeff Hardy defeated Sheamus. But again, both are really good in the ring. So I'm looking forward to this in a match-wise sense, not necessarily from a storyline standpoint. What about you? Are you invested emotionally in this?
Curious, but maybe that's about it. Just see how it goes. But I want to see where the storyline turns, because like I said, Trendsetter, when you're going to do something like this kind of storyline, and it looked to be a huge storyline when you have the accident outside of the PC and you have it around that area and you see
all the elements seem to be there.
It had all the elements, right? So you're wondering if there's going to be a huge payoff. And if it's just going to be a match of Backlash, then I don't see where the payoff is. If there's a title on the line, if there's something more, a career, or I don't know, just something more at stake than just a singles match at Backlash. But we'll see what they do. I mean, it's going to be interesting. They do have good chemistry in the ring. So here's an opportunity for Sheamus and Jeff Hardy to put on an entertaining match at Backlash. And again, though, but what
bothers... And the other thing I'll give credit to, Jeff, honestly, it's not to interrupt you there, but the one thing I'll give credit is that WWE is actually implementing time in a storyline. This has nothing to do with the title. It has nothing to do with the career. It has nothing to do with anything else. Just two individuals that are at heads with each other for personal reasons, and you know, it makes it an intriguing storyline. Am I interested in it personally? No, but again, it's something different from what we normally see.
No, you're correct, and that's a good way to view it. Definitely, and
it's,
I think
it's a great way to view it.
And I think what I had more of a problem with this past week was just the no pun intended, the backlash that this angle was getting.
Ooh.
Especially from, you know, Matt Hardy, who, you know, listen, I respect the hide of him, did a great job at the Stadium Stampede, but would I pay to see him wrestle in my backyard if it was for free? No. And
yeah, I mean,
and
you can respect anybody all you want. Yeah. It doesn't take away the fact that you don't agree with their mindset and their views. And like I said, a lot of the views are being pointed out towards this storyline between Jeff Hardy and Sheamus, to me, are kind of hypocritical.
The only thing, though, I say is be careful with this angle, because we've seen it again, like you said, with the CM Punk angle with Jeff Hardy. It was all about the addiction and the straight edginess, right? So you can only go with that striking a nerve with the audience one too many times. I know it was like a while back ago, but if you tried doing the same thing, the redemption story, eventually you want to see the redemption. You want to see what happens with Jeff Hardy. So like I said, you know, curious about the match with the match with Sheamus and Backlash, but again, I want to see where it goes, because Jeff Hardy right now, you can only push that angle so far before you want to see him at least succeed and become a champion of some sort. All right, Trent, then Otis and Baron Corbin ended up in a no DQ. Again, Otis is that lovable guy, but as long as Mandy's there, there's going to be a little bit of resentment by the guys that are like, oh, all right, this guy's got a beautiful girl on his arm, and he's got the Money in the Bank briefcase. Something's got to give, Trendsetter. And again, Otis, they love Otis for now. And, you know, short match, and you get the DQ here, so it doesn't really affect Baron Corbin. Keeps him heel against a major babyface right now in Otis. So what are your thoughts, Trendsetter, as we're heading into this evolution of Otis and what's going to happen? Where do you see a possible spot for him to cash in his Money in the Bank? Or will he even? Like I said, he's not even, to me, he's not cashing in this thing, because Mandy is too beautiful to stick around Otis.
She's too beautiful?
Beautiful.
She's bootyful, too. Yeah. That's also, you know, that also takes the cake with Mandy. But no, honestly, with this, it's hard to kind of determine, Jeff, when he's going to cash in. I think a lot of things have to play themselves out for in order for us to kind of have an idea. I kind of agree with you when you're saying that, you know, he might be the one that does, you know, he cashes in, but it doesn't work, or he doesn't necessarily cash it in. It's more for, you know, people to look at this as, oh, it's something different, or he might have the opportunity. You can definitely clearly see, Jeff, that WWE is trying to do everything they can to promote Otis. And this is where I kind of scratch my head. I mean, he was getting over anyway. People were liking him. He was becoming that lovable character.
Oh, yeah.
Especially now in that storyline they created with Mandy Rose. Now they're together. Him and Mandy Rose are together. And now, like I said, it could start building up resentment because as soon as you put two people that are supposed to be not together together, now it starts creating resentment. Like you said, the beautiful win on the guy's shoulders. But ultimately in this, I think what they're doing is really just trying to create more and isolate Otis more as a singles competitor and give it some type of believability because he needs to be in there with guys like Corbin and other guys of his stature because all of what maybe the last 5 months, I could be wrong with my math there, but he's been known more as just a tag team specialist.
Oh, yeah. Since he's
so you have
into,
to create that believability now, since Money in the Bank, that, hey, it's believable. It's not just a fluke. This guy can go in the ring. He's got good skill in the ring, too, but, you know, to make him believable, this is why the WWE's doing it. I see it for what it's worth, but again, like I said, it'll probably start developing a lot of resentment from the guys, but ultimately, I don't foresee him cashing it in. But when it's going to happen, it's too early to tell right now.
Yeah, and Tucker Knight again.
Let's wait till everybody comes back from the whole pandemic.
You're going to wait till that long?
Well, we have to wait till there's a full roster right now because, again, if you're going to do it on Braun Strowman hasn't been given ample opportunity to defend that title. I mean, I think they're still waiting the whole Bray Wyatt situation. So for him to cash in any earlier than that, I wouldn't think that.
Well, we'll get to Braun Strowman in a little bit here too. But as far as Otis is concerned, we go to now. You know, unfortunately, Tucker Knight is the main person here that suffered
the odd
because
man
of
out,
that.
Man.
You know, we talked about that the last two shows about Tucker Knight, and you know, we're not here on a soapbox for Tucker Knight. But again, though, when you get a push like this, and a guy that's been, like you said, typically associated with the tag team division, and you know, now his partner's nowhere around, we'll see if there's a twist or something there. You know, it could be just us thinking, hoping that Tucker gets a spot here to do something. But you know, it happens like this a lot, Trendsetter, when you're a tag team, and what happens to tag teams? Eventually, they break up. But here, with Heavy Machinery, it looks like they've broken up way much sooner than anyone expected. And hey, listen, it's also too on like who the we always talk about who the Marty and who the Sean is. You know who the Marty Jannetty is,
so
who Shawn Michaels is,
example,
right?
Yeah.
Which one is it? And I mean, you can clearly see that Otis is the one that had like the charisma, and you know Tucker still hasn't had a chance to show that off and everything like that. He was like that good friend that. You know, and here's where I think would be a good angle here is the good friend who kind of had his back, looked out for him, mm-hmm. and, you know, wanted him to succeed in trying to, you know, get Mandy Rose to be with him and stuff. And, you know, now all of a sudden he's put in the back burner. So we'll see if there could be something there that maybe the creative wants to do with Tucker Knight. But right now he's the odd man out.
Yeah, and you're even going far as to consider that. Like, I think right now he is the odd man out. So, do you even create that type of storyline? Yeah, I guess for storyline purposes it would work, but similar to the whole Jeff Hardy situation with Sheamus and the whole bringing personal stuff into a storyline and with the whole thing, best friend betraying me, you left me for a girl. I mean, we've seen that over and over again. So, could it happen? Yeah, probably could, but it can't. I wouldn't want to see it because, you know, nothing against Tucker, nothing against Otis, but I just don't think a match between them would be something that I'd be interested in watching, though.
Again, it's about emotional investment with the Trendsetter. So, one thing I liked about this show is that...
Well, I need that to do the show with you.
Very good. I'm going to get you one of these days, Trendsetter, because obviously you love Burning
Man. Well, it's not today, okay?
So, well, we still got a few minutes to go on the show, so we'll see if we can get you this time. But one thing I liked about this show is that there's a lot of wrestling, man. And that's not a bad thing. And, you know, there's only a few ways you're going to let this talent grow, and that's by giving them an opportunity. And the next match that we're going to talk about between Sonya Deville and Lacey Evans, to me, is a perfect example of, hey, listen, you got two people that are up-and-coming
female athletes in the women's division, and they've been given an opportunity here to display their wrestling skill. And not only that, dude, it was a hard freaking hitting match.
Yeah.
And you give credit to Lacey, and I told you that I believe that Serena Deville is an up and coming talent, and I think she's, you know, there's a future for her, you know, depending on if she wants to stick to the acting or if she want, you know, she wants to look into that. But if she's fully committed to this whole wrestling thing for, you know, the foreseeable future, to me, she really could be a major player here. And though she didn't come up with the win here, fell short because Mandy Rose interfered, well, you know, through the video screen, I really think that this match really was good for both of them. And it just shows you, if you just give them time, they will impress you. And I, to me, thought this match was really good.
Yeah, first thing that I would think of is that the last comment you just made, you give them time. I mean, some people, you don't want to give 20 minutes to. Let's be honest, right? Some people are just like, please, go out there for 2 minutes and get it over
think,
with.
I didn't think that 20 minutes was okay, you know, was a good lot of time for these.
Yeah, but it's a lot more than they've ever been given. Yeah. And again, this goes back to the point I was making, I think, last week, where I was like, you know what? This women's division is very depleted in terms of its roster. A lot of talent's not there right now due to this whole pandemic. Wait for it to come back. But at the same time, the one thing that annoyed me is every single storyline in the women's division was about the title. This one's personal. You were taking a scenario where it was a whole situation between Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose, and that's escalated itself now out where now Mandy Rose is dealing with her situation with Otis, still involved with Sonya Deville. But now Sonya's taking that out on her own and dealing with Lacey Evans in the scenario here where it's like two people that just kind of want to showcase that they're better than the other. And again, it's something different. It's getting personal between Lacey Evans and Sonya Deville, and that's what you want to see. That's what gets me invested, and that's the word you like to use now. It's the word of the day, folks. Every time we say invested or emotionally invested, we all scream, yay! But, you know, it's the reality of the situation. It's something different. You know, the one thing that made SmackDown and Raw, you know, I know we're talking about SmackDown here, so enjoyable, is that you had different layers. It's like a variety show. Everything for everyone. Or the example I like to use a lot that Jeff makes fun of me sometimes, Baskin Robbins.
No, we have 31 flavors here. No, I don't make fun of you. I think it's the perfect example.
Well, you make fun of me because you think I ever use it a lot, though.
Well, maybe, but it's a perfect example. It works.
Yeah, it works. And so you have different varieties of choosing what you like. If you like the comedic side, hey, you could stick to this. If you like the straight pure wrestling, it's this. And to add on to Jeff's comment early on when he said he liked the show in terms of where it was going, I thought it had a really good combination. You know, we saw a lot of wrestling, but also we saw a lot of the comedic thing with Braun Strowman and The Miz and John Morrison. And then we saw, you know, the straight up wrestling. And then we saw the interview segments and the backstage stuff. It's like, it's a good blend. And that's what you want for a show. And for a two-hour show, too, to put all those things together, that's why I like the show a lot. And you know, huge credit goes to Lacey Evans and Sonya Deville, because to go out there for 20 minutes and to be as hard-hitting as they were, you know, just gives a huge credit to them. And you said you're such a huge fan right now of Sonya Deville in terms of her star rising. And to me, I'm also a huge now believer in a sense of Lacey Evans, because from where she started to where she is now, and she's only getting better. She proved to me right now, if you give them 20 minutes, they're going to make it worth it.
And like you said, too, it's also developing rivalries outside of just the championships, right? Yeah.
You need
that
sometimes.
Yeah. Then the only thing, though, that I really don't like that Creative does is they don't give someone the natural edge, because, you know, they want to do 50-50, right? They want to do a lot of like, oh, we can't make her weak. We can't make her too strong. We can't make her too weak. So what bothers me is the distractions. Although they're setting up a Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville fight.
Yeah.
When you get the Lacey Evans and Sonya Deville, I just want to see a winner. I don't want to see like, oh, well, she won because of distraction. You put it out there, yeah, and then
she hooked the ropes.
Yeah,
or, you know,
exactly.
Kind of thing.
So the same thing again with the other matches too. Like, just have a definitive winner, and you know, you don't always have to like take care of the other person, because they can get the win back next week, or they can get another win. You don't always have to have excuses for why the other person won, especially, you know, when we head into the next matches here that we're going to discuss. You know, it's just like, you know, they worry too much about, oh, he can win, but he's got to get distracted because then it makes him look weak. And, I mean, really, like, sometimes you just got to, you know, get that pure victory and stuff like that, because that's going to make the person more credible. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, okay, well, AC Evans won,
perfect match, you give him 20 minutes, but then all of a sudden, boom, a distraction causes Sonya Deville to lose, gets Lacey Evans the upper edge, and then you can use that next week to make an excuse why Lacey Evans, you know, won, you know?
Exactly.
So, but again, though, I love that they got their 20 minutes in, man, because that's great. Both of them really did a great job.
More importantly, for me at least, the 20 minutes was worth it because it was a really good match.
Yeah, pretty sure they got claps backstage because that was a good one, Trendsetter. And so you said, again, we're going to talk about the Baskin-Robbins here. We go to the comedic side where Caleb Braxton
is... Keep talking about Baskin-Robbins, man. I could go for some ice cream right now.
Yeah, right. And so it is the summertime, man.
It is.
We must feast on... enjoy these few months of summer that we have. So if you want to, like, just... go for it with the Baskin Robbins. Do so, my friend.
Oh, yes. I'm going to overuse it like ridiculously today.
And so the comedic style. So when you build up a champion, you want to make sure, A, one thing, you build them up, and then you have rivalries. So it's peculiar how WWE loves to do the handicap matches for title defenses, right? And so now you have, of course, that Backlash, John Morrison and The Miz battling against Braun Strowman for the WWE Championship. Backstage scene, Kyle Braxton's interviewing him, and then you get, of course, the sophomoric humor that Vince loves.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
You get the Nickelodeon green slime that was intended for Braun Strowman, hits Kyle Braxton, and then, of course, the Miz and Morrison are seen in a van in production. They are basically setting up Braun here, trying to make his life miserable before their match at Backlash.
But lo and behold, they're making our lives miserable.
Exactly. And they fudged, and they hit Kyle Braxton, and then we have Braun Strowman, you know, saying that he didn't know about this. And it's obviously a prank by the Miz and John Morrison. And here you have two guys in the Miz and Morrison who work well together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know,
got great chemistry.
They're friends, got great chemistry, but they're putting a comedic role here as they're, you know, as they're trying to get on the bad side of Braun Strowman, which isn't too hard to do. So that happens, and then, of course, you have, again, too, they decide to beat up his car, and they tear it up, and they trash it, and Braun's like,
prior to that, though, prior to the slime, prior to them destroying the car that he come in, and obviously it's a rental, the mere fact that
I don't see Braun driving that kind of
Braun
car.
Braun getting a drink.
Yeah.
Saying hello to a referee and asking him about his family, which is kind of weird. Do you think, Braun, what do you care? But they're showing the human side of Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
Pours a drink. I guess whatever he poured into his drink caused it to explode, kind of like when you shake up a soda and it sprays all over you, and him getting mad, and Miz and Morrison just laughing hysterically in the back. And the funny, the only thing I'm laughing about it too is it's that dumb sophomore humor that he uses. But they do it so well, though, too. It's like the jokes are corny. The execution is corny. But, hey, man, I got to give props to Miz and Morrison, though, because although I didn't like that particularly, I don't like that. I'm not saying that I did like what they did or how the WWE presented it. Dude, like, those guys, they go 100% into that, and, you know, I applaud them, because sometimes when you're – for me, all I know is doing the show with Jeff, it's difficult. But when I'm given a script, a piece of paper, and it's like, all right, guys, listen, this is what you're going to do, and you're like, really? I'm like, all right, let's give it 100%, then, like I tried to do on the show with Jeff. It's like, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due there.
Yeah, and – there's going to be the side that says, I don't want to see Morrison and The Miz in a comedic angle. Mm-hmm. I want them to be more serious. But then you think about them, and Miz and Morrison are in a great spot because The Miz was doing nothing. Mm-hmm. John Morrison came in. They had no idea what to do with him. Let's be honest. So they put him in with The Miz.
Classic, just buy talent for talent's sake.
That's what I believe. Yeah. And shame on creative. But, hey, it worked. They put them together. They know that they're going to work well. And you know what? At the end of the day, it does. And where are they right now? They're vying for the World Championship, the WWE Championship, at Backlash.
The Universal Championship. Mm-hmm.
And you're right. They switch so many freaking times.
Exactly, and the point you made, too, it separates them from everybody else, because everybody else is serious and mean and conniving. They're different. They're the comedic side, so it separates them from everybody else.
Yeah, so, and they can do it. They pull it off really well, you know, because The Miz has a huge personality. Morrison does, but you got to get it out of him, and The Miz does get it out of him.
The Miz does a great job of doing that for
him,
and
the facial gestures are great, and then we get to, the scene where, again, they're trashing Strowman's rental, and then, of course, Strowman,
he picks up big things and puts them down, and that's what he did again with the van. So basically he gets really, really upset, and he picks up the van that Miz and Morrison are in and basically flips it over, and you get Braun coming off looking strong and, of course, getting the best of Miz and Morrison as they're supposedly in that van while he flips it over. And then you get the, you know, you get the push, that one of those final pushes for the match at Backlash.
Yeah, figuratively and literally, right?
Yeah.
The literal push of the van tipping over. But, you know, if we ever had any doubts, Jeff, that Braun Strowman was in strongman competition, every single time he pulls a van over, an ambulance in this case, we know he has been involved in those competitions. So great for reminding us, WWE, that that's been Braun Strowman's career prior to becoming a WWE superstar and prior to becoming the Universal Champion.
But you're right there, Trent.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was about to choke on my saliva there because I'm so heated, damn it. But this is what causes me concern a little bit sometimes. And we spoke about this on the High Spot podcast not too long ago that, you know, when we looked at the whole situation, the whole pandemic thing, about a guy like Drew McIntyre not getting his moment, and now Drew McIntyre has gone from the Scottish psychopath to, you know, the sexy Scotsman and becoming a comedic guy out there.
I think he's trying to be comedic.
No, I understand that, but you and I talked about how, like, you know, the whole Seth Rollins. Yeah, exactly. See? Karma. Karma's you know what. But, you know, him with Seth Rollins, now with Bobby Lashley, and then it's like there are not that many guys right now that can kind of highlight the fact that he's a champion and he can elevate them as well. The scenario with Braun Strowman is now, for the longest time, the public wanted him to become a champion. Now he's the Universal Champion. Not the way he wanted it, because that was supposed to be Roman Reigns' spot, not necessarily his. So he gets it at a default. Defeats Goldberg. Now he's the champion. Has a rivalry. Has some history with Bray Wyatt. Now Bray Wyatt's out of the picture for a while. We don't know when he'll come back or when we're going to see him again. They might be timing that out for a special moment.
So he had a baby,
moment.
Another baby again? Is that what it is? Is that why he took the time off?
I'm assuming that's why. Again, you don't know whether he's been dealing with injuries and stuff like that, but you like to think because his daughter was being born that that's why they wanted to get him off
that
TV.
Is congratulations to Bray.
Yeah, congratulations to him. And now Braun is in the scenario, too, now where he's in a comedic handicap match. Now, granted, Morrison and Miz will make it a very entertaining match. It will be an entertaining match at Backlash, but I'm thinking, like, what horrible timing could there be now for what everybody wanted, and now, unfortunately, we're not seeing the Braun Strowman we wanted to see as a champion right now. That's what my biggest fear is going to hurt him down the road, basically.
And you know what? I really wouldn't put it past, and I think it would be creative if WWE put the titles on Miz and Morrison. I think they would have a good...
A dual Universal Champion.
I really do think that that would be something that would be a challenge that the Miz and Morrison would love to, you know, undertake, because I think that that would be fun. I think that they would make it something different, and I think it's not far out of the realm of possibility that it could happen at Backlash, you know, and nothing against Braun. You know, but I think that if you say, hey, I want a little bit of comedy, I want some really, like, over-the-top stuff, I think Morrison and The Miz could deliver on being dual Universal Champions. I think that would be great. I think it would be an interesting and creative way to attack that.
Yeah,
and, you know,
true.
And but again, though, if Bray Wyatt or The Fiend come back sooner than later, you might not want to do that, but can Morrison and The Miz, you know, carry that out? I definitely do think that they could. So it's interesting to see. It's not like a 100%, you know, go that Braun's going to walk away at Backlash as the champion, because I think Miz and Morrison could pull it off.
Yeah, no, I'd like to admit that I agree with that. I really do. Because, again, it takes away from the logic, and granted, people are like, oh, this is pro wrestling, this is sports entertainment. There's no logic involved. There is some logic involved in here, guys. There is some logic. But in this case, yeah, it breaks the mold, too, and gives us something that, oh, we weren't expecting, which we could get a Backlash. So there is a viable threat there.
All right, so I was going to write an article for BodySlam.net, and that's where we have the High Spot podcast. You can go on there and check out High Spot podcast and all podcast platforms. We will be back soon, and I'll announce something about that at the end of the show, where you can find us, if not on the WWE podcast, delivering the HSP SmackDown review. But I was going to write an article a while when Sami Zayn had to forfeit the title. That was the final nail in the coffin for the Intercontinental Championship, right?
Yeah.
I had always had the hopes that it would be that workman's like champion, that one that it would be what it was in the '90s and '80s, and that's the workman championship, that the guy that had that title was the next in line to be the world champion. And I love that aspect. I love that tradition. I love the way it used to look. I mean, I like this title, but I mean, I love that Intercontinental title. Mm-hmm. You know, just because it's a little bit bigger too than the Winged Eagle belt too, yeah. And it just had its own look and the tradition. Of course, you know that Pat Patterson winning it in Rio de Janeiro.
We know the history about it.
In 120 degree weather in Brazil, right? What I liked about it was that next in line guy. But I kind of lost hope with Sami Zayn because I thought he was going to do something with it. But then when you see these two guys in AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan here have that title in between them when they're trying to deliver their promos and make their case of why they should be the champion, you know what, man? I'm going to hold out hope that one of these guys can deliver and make that championship what it should be. I don't want to say make that Intercontinental title great again, but I just want to, make that IC title great again. And I really think that this is the last hope that they can do that, because when you see AJ and Daniel Bryan and you see that title in between them, man, it makes it so important.
It does from a visual standpoint, Jeff, but prior to years prior to that, where, you know, we had the Universal Championship on Raw and the WWE Championship on SmackDown, the way they treated the WWE Championship was more like, all right, this is going to be the Workman's title. So the way AJ carried it and the way he used it was similar to what the Intercontinental title used to be, right? I just don't think they have that type of mindset right now. I think the Intercontinental title has, you know, it's been used for a lot of comedic relief. We know it doesn't get defended on every pay-per-view, similar to the United States title.
It's a prop.
It goes back, guys, to the mindset that I've always had, and I've shared this with Jeff, and we've talked to certain talent on the High Spot podcast, whether it be promoters, talent within the industry. It's always the same type of mentality from the standpoint that the title doesn't make the individual has to make the title. So when you look at guys like Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles, they don't need the championship. But them purely having it, and another thing I like to use a lot too, is perception is reality. When they have that title, it means something because they have it, because they're held in such high regard. But the problem that I have is that, you know, when you have a guy like Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles competing for, I mean, on paper itself, if you're a true purist of wrestling, you're going to love watching this match and the competition and the determination they both want, because they both want to be the champion.
And the build for this, I mean, I really want to see this match again, yeah. You know?
My problem is, you're going to do that, it's going to help out, but then eventually once, because here's the thing, and I hate to be cynical when I think about this too, Jeff, but whenever you see a champion, whether it be Drew McIntyre on Raw, we have Braun Strowman, the thing you always think about, what's the next thing? Who's the next competitor? Who's the next challenge? And what happens when, all right, it's time to switch things around, because now people are getting tired of this guy being the champion they want. This person who's the new up-and-comer, the new, you know, person that's hot right now, we want him to be the champion. You do that move, and then that momentum that's built up dies down. That's my biggest fear. But when we talk about this storyline in particular, Jeff, I can't tell you how freaking annoyed I am with Daniel Bryan. Hey, I love Daniel Bryan. I love this scenario where, you know, he came back, he was forced to retire, he gave a very heartfelt speech about how the Intercontinental Championship, he mentioned this on backstage, a WWE backstage free plug there for you guys, you desperately need it. He mentioned how that was the last title he had before he was forced to retire, and he really wanted to make that title again, similar to what you talked about, the Workman's Horse title, right? And it didn't happen, unfortunately. Was forced to retire, had to relinquish the title, was never beaten for it, and now all he's up to here full circle, he wants to reclaim what he thought he had an opportunity several years ago. But the mere fact that Daniel Bryan has the gall with the short little hair and short beard now to call AJ Styles a coward, when this is the same man, Jeff, and this is what makes me laugh sometimes, because WWE likes to give us the impression that whatever happened in the past never happened. Yeah. This is the same man who faced AJ Styles for the WWE Championship, the title that AJ Styles made relevant again in the house that AJ Styles built on SmackDown, kicks him in the balls, I can say balls on the show, and defeats him for it, and then sparingly defends the WWE Championship when he wants to, because everybody else is fickle and doesn't deserve a title shot, right? And now calls AJ Styles, one of the most decorated wrestlers out there in the world. They've had history. They know each other very well. Different philosophies in life. Okay, great, granted. But you're going to call him a coward because he was a smart guy to take the bye week? Really? You're going to call him one when you yourself, look at yourself in the mirror, Daniel Bryan, and say that to yourself, because he's just a coward too, because he wants to defend that title every single day. Well, hopefully it happens, you don't get injured. But oh my God, that completely made me host sour on the Daniel Bryan situation.
So that's why basically this is why you are invested, because this has hit a nerve. This has gotten you emotionally wanting to see Daniel Bryan, you know, maybe lose to AJ Styles probably. Mm-hmm. But you're going to watch next week and see what happens, because, hey, if Daniel Bryan wins it, hey, then you're going to be like, oh, man, you know, is he going to be that fighting champion? Is AJ Styles going to, you know, what's he going to do with the title once he has it? So it's going to be really interesting to see. But what I like about this so much is that, again, it's going to bring to me some validity to the Intercontinental title.
Validity. Yeah.
Validity to the IC title. But again, though, like, you know, creative, you got to be careful with what you're saying here, because you're making Daniel Bryan contradictory. You're not the only person that's picking it up on it. Everyone's picking up on it. Yeah. And it's just happened like less than a year ago. So to see this happen is like, wow, creative, you really got to do a much better job with this, because you're setting yourself open to Daniel Bryan being considered a hypocrite. Because AJ Styles should bring that up. Oh, weren't you the same guy that kicked me in the nuts?
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Why can't he bring it up? They've had history before. Why can he not bring that up?
Yeah.
I don't know why. Because he's supposed to be the heel, isn't he? Why isn't that's a heelish tactic to bring up, too. And, you know, and also, and then your boy Drew Gulak, who gets himself a contract, you know, now has the opportunity to face AJ Styles. And AJ Styles, finally being a man, gets beat by Drew Gulak.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that was a fluke. That was a fluke. But you know what? It brings now doubt that AJ's not as confident going into it. So from a storyline standpoint, I get why they did that. But honestly, when I hear Daniel Bryan talk and he keeps mentioning Coward, something in me just wants to freaking rip up the piece of paper. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, here's the problem, too, though. Like, you're trying to make him to be the good guy, the face. But if it's going to be hypocritical like that, then you're going to be like, wait a minute, Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
You know, the wrestling fan is oh, you call this fickle, and you want to be a fighting champion every week on SmackDown, and that's the good part, because he will be a fighting champion every week on SmackDown as a face.
If he becomes an Intercontinental
champion. And that'll be a positive. But you're the same dude that won the championship, the world championship, and then you did sparingly, you defended sparingly, didn't want to face Kofi, and all that stuff happened, and now all of a sudden we're supposed to believe, like, oh, now good Daniel Bryan here, the virtuous Daniel Bryan now, is saying that AJ Styles is the coward, when you were the coward like maybe less than a year ago. So, I mean, that's where creative's got to, like, be like, listen, man, you know, we got to be careful with the words here. And it kind of makes AJ Styles a little weaker, too, because if you don't bring that up, man, if you don't bring up the fact that, hey, wait a minute, you know, you kicked me in the nuts and you did all this stuff, whatever,
like that. You call me a coward?
And I'm the coward. All right, you know what I mean? Come on, that's calling the
kettle black. Because you're going to beat me clean.
Yeah.
You decided to resort and cheat both times for the championship when I beat you cleanly.
How about AJ Styles goes, hey, I'll make sure when I fight you, I wear a cup.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Yeah, something. A little jab there.
A little jab at him or something. Did you like that AJ Styles impression?
Oh, yeah, it was really good.
I was like, Daniel Bryan, next time.
He's got that southern twang.
Next time you fight me, I'll make sure I wear a cup.
Oh, yeah, definitely
like that. There you go.
It's my age. Dude, style. But again, at the end of the day, that's awesome. But at the end of the day, despite the storyline, how frustrated I get when Daniel Bryan speaks to the kind of stuff, though, I'm looking forward to that, though. Because that's going to be not 20 minutes. I saw people on social media say, give me 45 minutes of that match. I'm all for it. Give me 45 minutes. Yeah. That'd be the easiest SmackDown you'll ever have to write in terms of a script. All right, let's get an opening segment. Let's get little things here. All right, 45 minutes, guys. You have, what, 7 segments. Go ahead, go. Type of thing. That would work.
Yeah. And then, you know, we got 6-man tag team action with Kofi and Big E and Shorty G taking on Shinsuke Nakamura, Cesaro, and... Mojo Rawley?
Yeah.
I
thought you were going to say Gronkowski, but no. It's
no, Rob Gronkowski. His Twitter handle has his real name, right?
Yes, it does. So, a lot of superstars are doing that now, where instead of putting their name, like, it'll be on their Twitter
Carmella's
handle.
Got the same thing, right?
She has her real name attached to it, too. Yeah, so it's like...
So his
break the fourth wall, guys.
Yeah, so I was about to call him by his real name, and I was like, okay. So here is WWE.
Oh, stop it. I was probably thinking, who's the third guy? For a split second, I was like, wait, who's the – oh, it's Mojo, in my mind. So I think that thought that's why you hesitated.
I hesitated because I thought I was going to pronounce his first name, and I didn't know how to pronounce it correctly.
Oh, okay.
And I was like,
Mojo is
easier
to
pronounce. I go, I can get away with calling him Mojo Rawley, but it is Mojo Rawley. So here you go, WWE, with that pushing Mojo again.
And, you know, you're like, okay. And boy, Corey Graves, man, has a man crush on Mojo Rawley. Everything was freaking Mojo Rawley. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, Mojo Rawley gets it gets pinned by Kofi Kingston.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, I mean, yes, here's them pushing the guy, but not really pushing the guy at the end. And that one, you want to talk about me getting heated, was like, come on now. You're like, oh, his freakish strength. Oh, God, Michael Cole. He's so goddamn handsome. Like, all this stuff, right? And then
I didn't catch it. They said it
was No. I'm just
I was like, that's a huge man crush right there.
I'm just saying
Carmelo might be upset about that.
I'm just going a little bit like over the top here, but okay, I'm like, it's the classic, the commentator's pushing the hell out of the guy. Mm. And obviously it's somebody feeding him that stuff in the headset. And
you
then
didn't know that for sure.
Oh, come on. and then Corey Graves is better than that. And here's, you know, somebody that's been out of the scene for a while, and we know him more as Gronk's friend. Right, and the guy.
Oh,
that's
I know
kind
more
as
the hype guy, the hype bros. I know more from that. From NXT.
No. He is Gronk. To me, before he is Mojo Rawley, he is Rob Gronkowski's friend.
Okay.
He hasn't proven it to me yet that he can do it on the level of on SmackDown or on NXT or anything like that.
Well,
just
for my defense, though, he was that before we found out he was friends with Rob Gronkowski. So,
well,
I'm just saying that.
Well, it's evolved then to being Rob Gronkowski's friend. He's got to get the hell out of that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he does. Again, I'm rooting for everybody here. You know, I want to see everybody succeed, man. I don't want to see people future endeavored and stuff like that. So I'm putting it on Mojo. I'm putting on Creative. You know, I'm putting on them to show me that he's not just Gronk's friend. So, anyways, you get this match here. It's a really good match, too. Again, the matches here killed on SmackDown.
They
did. Really great job. All in all, it was a good show. And then all of a sudden, you know, Shorty G, to me, has so much untapped potential. He's entertaining in the ring, too. I love that he's using that ankle lock as well because it's legitimate, especially when you're a dude like, you know, his size. And again, you know, his size, I wish I was like 5'9", 5'10". And for him to use that, it's good because it's a good neutralizer.
Yeah.
It equalizes the men. If you get a bigger guy down and use the ankle lock, any guy at any size can win.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great too. The match was entertaining. I feel bad for Shinsuke and Cesaro because I want to see more out of them. I think those are two guys that they really gotta untap their potential because to me it's not six man action.
Worth of potential,
you know? Hopefully if Daniel Bryan wins, you can get matches with Nakamura and Cesaro because damn it, man, they deserve it. And
well,
you know,
just that. Hopefully, if AJ Styles wins too, and anybody who wins the Intercontinental title will hopefully give guys like Cesaro, Shinsuke more opportunities to showcase themselves. Now, Shinsuke is a previous former Intercontinental champion, but again, you know, we want more competition. We want more people that have talent, like you mentioned, be showcased.
Exactly.
There.
So, you know, I'm pulling for Mojo. So then, of course,
I'm pulling for Shorty G.
Yeah. And both of them, too. I want to see everybody on that level because they can be and because they need to be here. We got a pandemic here. We need people to step it up. We need creative to step up the storylines. We need to showcase them. And again, SmackDown has done a great job this week in showcasing their talent. So
you had a great point, showcasing the limited amount of talent that they have. And hopefully, you like to hope when things start reverting back to quote-unquote normal, that these people like the Shorty G or now they're giving Mojo Rawley an eye, people are actually seeing him again after a while, it doesn't go back to the way it was.
Yeah, keep it up, though. Just make sure you keep it up. Make sure I see Mojo next week. Make sure I see him the week after. Because, you know, other than that, just be like, oh, okay, Mojo's just there. He's just a filler. And
exactly.
I want WWE to get me out of that mode. Because I really like Mojo at the end of the day. He's a good dude. So, I mean, please, more Mojo Rawley and keep it up. And again, Creative, don't have the commentators like push him to the moon and then all of a sudden have him lose. I mean, you know, come on. Let's be a little bit better than that as well. And then Trendsetter, we got, of course, the tag team, the women's tag team titles on the line. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross defending against Bayley and Sasha Banks. And here is Trendsetter again, another good match, but WWE has to put the titles on Bayley and Sasha because it's another way.
He's giving away now.
It's another way for them to add to this, you know, eventual split because you have the tag team titles, like tag team champions that can't get along eventually down the road.
Yeah.
This is again another classic storyline where you put two people that are eventually going to square off down the road, and you're going to put the titles on them.
right, to cause even more friction on them as well. So I feel bad for Alexa and Nikki because they had, to me, something going here. They got great chemistry. It's not like they're probably going to, you know, haven't seen the end of those tag team titles, but for now, they're going to put it on Sasha and Bayley just to further storyline development between Bayley and Sasha, because we know eventually down the road, the split is coming.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to the split in 2023 when it actually happens.
when they actually pull the trigger on it.
Exactly. Or, you know, hopefully, you know, Sasha hasn't lost her smile and she'll come back, you know, several times and then get renewed to a new contract and still complain about it. But despite all that, too, I'm in agreement in the sense that I really wasn't ready. And a lot of people expressed on social media weren't ready to see Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss titles. I think they had really – and another word I'll use, guys, a lot you hear on this show, too, is not just emotional investment, not Baskin-Robbins 31 flavors. But, again, when things and you guys listening can definitely tell, when things happen in an organic fashion, it just makes it that much more special. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, nothing was ever supposed to happen between the two of them together in terms of being a tag team. It was more for comedic relief. I think ultimately the end was going to happen was Nikki Cross was going to be a huge fan of Alexa. Alexa was going to show her true colors, that she was a heel fashion at that time, which I think still to this day she does better than anybody right now. And there's going to be a battle between the two of them, and then they're going to write them off and go their separate ways. That, organically, the fans love that combination between the two of them. It led to them becoming tag team champions. And to get that now over with, now, like I said, it's not the last we've seen of these two teams squaring off against each other, but now you're adding the tag team titles to, again, you said an eventual split that was 2 years down the road we're supposed to see. It might happen 3 years ahead of here. You know, the situation now with, you know, and this has always been a huge gripe of mine. It's great to see the tag team division flourish, whether it be the men or the female. But I'm never a huge fan, Jeff, ever. I've never been a huge fan of a champion, whether it be Intercontinental, U.S. champion, a W champion, a world, Universal champion, a women's champion on SmackDown, women's champion on Raw, or even an NXT champion of any sorts. Becoming another champion at
because
the same time.
Because one title is going to be overshadowed.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. The same thing. Again, the women's tag team title was really interesting when it was with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. And then just to take it off of them to make it a part of the feud with Bayley and Sasha Banks is so detrimental.
I think it was the wrong idea. I really feel it was the wrong idea.
It was working so good the way it was. And then you're going to put the titles on them, which, again, listen, it's because it's for storyline purposes, that's always a wrong way to do it. When you put it on a world champion, right, and then all of a sudden you give them the tag team titles, what are you going to get? You're going to get on Raw and SmackDown, the main event, for the tag team title, it's going to be this so-and-so against, you know, those other people.
And
whatever,
for the Bruce Pritchards out there and all the people that would defend most likely that type of move, which I get it. Again, we understand it. We're not being it's the wrong thing. You shouldn't have done that.
Because you're main-eventing the tag team titles, which is a good thing. But
again, what concerns me is when you do that type of move, which makes sense, I guess, from
the world title's not getting defended.
Business standpoint, not only does the world title not get defended for the women, but also, say, down the road a week or a month from now, that title now flip-flops back and forth. Now you take away, in my opinion, the relevancy of that title, because now it's being used, as you said very well in the middle of the show, as a prop. I don't want the tag team titles to be considered a prop. I want the tag team championships to be considered something that it is the highest echelon of whatever it is you're vying for in that type of division, whether it be a singles competition or a tag team division. When you flip-flop it back and forth, you know, to me that becomes a perception, oh, anybody can win these titles. Any given day, this person can win it. Any given day, that person can win it. It's like it has to be something that's very difficult to obtain and not something done that easily. When was the last time you saw Sasha and Bayley tag team together?
Well,
and then
they
defeat a tag team that's well-established, and Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. So to me, it gives a wrong perception. But again, we get it from a business standpoint. It's building up to, like you said, the hopefully eventual. Hopefully I won't get enough more grays in my beard when it actually happens between Bayley and Sasha, which in my opinion, I think eventually does happen. It's not going to have the same zest it once had maybe probably 2 years ago.
You know, I can't disagree with you there. I really can't. I mean, it's the signs are there. I mean, you're going to get that. And once you put the tag team titles on them, you're like, you know, lock, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So is it sooner than later? I don't know, man. Could they hold this all the way till Mania in L.A.?
Oh, God.
With this, you know, I mean, we waited 3 years, so you might as well, you know.
Wait another one.
Yeah, so, yeah. And a really good match, again, too. And then Sasha beats Nikki Cross with the crucifix. Now, they can either go in a lot of ways here. They can have Nikki and Alexa split,
And
I don't think they'll do
they
that.
Could have Alexa go for the women's championship on either brand, because you know what they need, like you were talking about the depth, they kind of need that. But again, I would love to see them together, and it also helps Nikki Cross, because Nikki Cross, to me, I think she did a great job playing off Alexa Bliss,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you root for her because she's great, and so you know, they're better together than apart, and it would, I really think it would hurt Nikki if she were you know, split from Alexa Bliss.
And, you know, it's so funny about Nikki Cross. We met her at the Performance Center not too long ago. Such a great person. And also, it's like you begin to forget, as I did, Jeff, that when Nikki Cross came from NXT to SmackDown, she was just crazy, screaming, didn't really say any words.
Yeah.
And now she has her own type of care. We like Nikki Cross because she's showcasing herself too. Yeah, we don't want the split to happen. We want them to continue going. I think it's going to continue though. I think the chase is going to happen now where Alexa and Nikki are going to be chasing Bayley and Sasha. I think eventually, hopefully sooner than later, the title switch will happen again. And this will lead into the storyline of, again, we'll have an established tag team again in Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. Not that Nikki or Alexa, especially in this case Alexa, not taking anything away from Nikki, though, cannot go back in that singles competition. But I think right now, I don't think there's anything much there for Alexa right now, because in all honesty, she accomplished a lot in an individual career.
Yeah.
Very early, not, I won't say early on, but since she transferred over from NXT to the main rosters, whether it be Raw and SmackDown, she's had quite an impact. So I think taking her out of that title picture is a smart move, because now she can help establish the tag team division. And then eventually go to the singles competition again. But I think right now, everybody's buying, everybody's really weighing in that storyline of Sasha and Bayley finally splitting up and will be over the tag team titles. You'd think that's going to happen.
But no, I think we'll lose the tag team title, when tag team titles will be the blame game. They'll just keep adding up to it. But we'll see. We'll see Trendsetter. So listen, before we wrap up here, I just want to apologize, because last week I said that In Your House was last week and that this week would be a backlash. So I don't know what the hell I was smoking, but I'll take the mea culpa, because it was my fault. And my dumb self actually sat there at 6:45 last Sunday, and I went there and I clicked and I told you, hey, Trendsetter. I was like I'm watching.
You just call me Trendsetter. That'd be really weird.
Trendy. Hey, Trendy. Hey, Brian. I was like, hey, this stupid Sting, the lost tape is playing, and I can't find In Your House.
Oh God, we actually watched it too,
and I was like, man, this tape should have stayed lost. Yeah. So anyways, man, don't watch that. What a way for Sting to leave WWE with that tape.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh man, like I actually put this on air, and I told them to watch this. So I don't know what I was thinking. SmackDown is this. This Sunday. I'm going to be interested to watch it. Make sure you watch the NXT.
Not SmackDown. NXT
SmackDown?
In Your House.
Oh, NXT In Your House is this Sunday. SmackDown SmackDown will be part of the whole Backlash Raw and SmackDown, right? The Backlash next week. So I don't know what I was saying. I was probably praying for June so fast.
It's
so
anyway, the heat. It's
so,
gotten to.
So the NXT review is going to preview NXT In Your House. So you definitely want to listen to that by Zach Smith. You got the Raw reviews, the Wrestling Nostalgia Saturday Night Week in Review with a bunch of guest hosts, with Mary Grader, Ashley Mann, Anthony DeMarco, of course. It's hosted by Matt, who runs the WWE podcast. And then, you know, so many other things, too. We love doing this HSP SmackDown review, man. Yep. It's been great for the third week in a row. You know, so thank you to everyone there who's listening. And again, man, I was like maybe on a natural high last week doing the show. That's why I messed up with the previews. I'm pretty sure a lot of people were like, the hell is this guy talking about? You can catch us on Twitter, on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. We will be back next week. As far as the High Spot Podcast, we will have the 32-team tournament as far as wrestling matches, because, of course, it is the greatest wrestling match ever between Randy Orton and Edge. And
this is the greatest show.
I can't believe that's a freaking
sound like Queen,
song.
Didn't it?
And so we're gonna have like a little mini tournament here. Hey, listen, it's a pandemic. We need content. So that's what we're going to do here. And I think it's going to be fun, Trendsetter, on the Last Spot Podcast to do this. So definitely listen to that, man. We are on bodyslam.net. And Trendsetter, man, before I embarrass myself even more here on the show,
too late.
I'll leave it over to you.
Well, thank you so much again. That's my tag team partner, the scoundrel Jeff Martin. I'm the trendsetter Brian Berger. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the HSP SmackDown Review. Remember, you can catch the Last Bout podcast and all the social media content Jeff just mentioned. You can also catch us on YouTube as well, as we promote a lot of the scenarios where we go to conventions and interview talent. We put them on our YouTube channel. Give us a like, give us a subscribe. Hit that post notification to make sure you see future episodes of that as well. So, guys, for the Jersey Dragon crew, we thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. We'll catch you again next week for another SmackDown review. And remember, we do this for one reason and one reason only. We do this for you, the crew.